Am I going to stay in this view next to you, Jay? Is that what we're doing? I guess we're going to be partners in this deal. I'm going to go with gallery. Nana, I don't feel alone. First of all, thank you guys so much for including me. This big surprise, what category I'm in, I'll explain that in a moment. But I love Boston and I love Boston people. And I learned something yesterday. I am an addict of Louis L'Amour books. So I read these books and I learned something yesterday that Shawmut is part of Boston. And so I get my geography lesson and the good guys always win with Louis L'Amour. Okay. I start every talk this way. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous for 2 weeks of sobriety. Can you hear me okay? Okay, thank you. I came for 2 weeks of sobriety. I had been drinking since I was 5 years old. Whew. And I was 27 years old, and it was hard. I was hospitalized when I was 26 with a suspected heart attack. I came from a family that drank. It was all military, and we were Sergeant Rock, and I certainly wasn't. And it went like that. And so I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Ultimately, I had gone to priests and therapists, and God bless, they all tried to help. And then I came to you because I woke up one morning and figured out that I can't stop drinking. I mean, that's a revolutionary thought. I'm telling you, it came in from Mars. It's like, I can't stop drinking. And I went 1 week and I realized I was not going to be able to stay sober. So I came to you. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous one night. I made a call and I started on this trip. My experience in Alcoholics Anonymous was, it was like I was a fish out of water. It's like you take a fish out of a tank and throw it on the sidewalk. And that's what I felt like because I didn't know a life without drinking alcohol. And it hurt me so, so much. That alcohol hurt me so much. And I thought, if I could get 2 weeks where I don't live like that, where I don't hurt like that, where I'm not so sick, where I don't wake up with my hands like this and I can't straighten them. And I talked to somebody and I said, what's wrong with my hands? He said, man, it's the booze. And I'm going like, what? Because everybody drinks, right? But it didn't work on me. And I have two brothers. They're not alcoholic. My parents are not alcoholic. And the fickle finger of fate chose me. What an honor. What a stupid thing to say, right? No, it's an honor. It's an honor. We are special people. Okay, listen, we know nobody speaks for Alcoholics Anonymous, right? So I want to sign up for that right now. We are special people. God chose us. God chose us to be a representative that says, you know what? God exists. You don't believe God exists? I'm telling you, no doctor, no priest, no minister, no nothing can keep me sober. You can't see my bodyguard, and he's right behind me, and he carries me. So that 2 weeks has multiplied into 47 years. Well, it'll be 47 years on February 12th, so I'm sneaking up on it. I always tell my sobriety date a few days early because I'm so, inclined to impress. But I'm pretty impressed. I'm pretty impressed because I didn't die, but the trip has been unbelievable. 47 years. So I came in working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous out of the book because I had nowhere else to run. But I'll say this very quickly. When I found out this was a spiritual program, I really wanted to run. And my thought was, are these people going to try to cure me with fairy tales? Because I had lost my faith in God. And I thought, oh no, they don't understand. I got to really get some help because everything's falling apart. So I went to lunch with my sponsor at the time, and I was in a group that was very, very precise. And they were about tough love. And I must be honest here because it turned into abuse. It's real easy to abuse a person coming in out of the street, right? What do I know? And then when you get all this hard stuff, and so I stood for the hard stuff. I got great precision from it. But I was so suicidal, I could taste it. I would sit in a meeting and I just wanted to die. And when I got sober in 74, if you talked about your feelings in a meeting, they called it psychobabble and they muzzled you. Now I'm being muzzled about the disease of alcoholism. You know what I'm saying? I need to talk to somebody about alcoholism, and I don't know how to differentiate drinking from alcoholism. You know what I'm saying? So I started going through this group and I'm going like, why do I want to commit suicide and where do I go for help? And then I got passed up the ranks to the top guy. And I got to the top guy and he looked at me and he says, I told him that I was really hurting and suicidal. And by that, I mean, I have a .32 automatic pistol in the top drawer of my dresser. This is not, you know, something that I'm just making up. This is real. My plan, and don't we all have a plan when we come here? My plan was, if this doesn't work, I'm going to put my brains on the wall, which is terrible. But there I am. I'm in the claws of alcoholism. So I talked to him and he looks at me and he said, he was a great big guy. He looks at me, he says, I don't know, man, maybe you're going to drink. And I heard the clank of the prison doors shut. I thought, oh my God, I have got something that can't be handled in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know what Anonymous to go to. So I had been reading a book by this American monk named Thomas Merton. And Thomas Merton wrote this book called New Seeds of Contemplation, okay? Now I'm desperate and I go and I get my book and I've been reading it. I've been reading that book for over 50 years. And only these chapters, 32 to 36. Anyway, I start reading the book and I'm reading in the book. Now, I will say that my time in Alcoholics Anonymous has been packed with surprises, unbelievable surprises, and it has never stopped. And it's going on right now. And I start reading these chapters and he is describing how I feel. Now, I expected spirituality. Well, I expected that if I stopped drinking, I would get rainbows and butterflies and things would be easy. And I would stop being this insane jerk that I couldn't tolerate. I got put the bottle down. I got sober and I ran into Mickey and I couldn't handle him any more than anybody else could. And I got kicked out of my schools. I couldn't stay there. I would just run away. And that's the kind of lead up I had to sitting in these meetings. And I thought, my God, I'm going to die. So I start reading Thomas Merton. Huge surprise, number two. One of them is that I got sober. Second surprise is he describes everything that's happening to me. And it turns out in chapters 32 to 36, he is describing a spiritual experience. I'm right in the middle of a spiritual experience. God has come for me. God has come for me. And I'm getting what I crave. And he will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Oh, my dear Lord. So I got this sponsor. And I have to do a quick aside. I'm talking as fast as my brain will let me. My sponsor, one guy out of that group was this little guy with a burr haircut. And all the rest of these guys were so mean, but George was a little softer. And I thought, you know, he's this guy with a burr haircut. I can steamroller this guy. And he'd just come back from three tours in Vietnam as a Navy medic attached to the Marines. He's one of the toughest guys ever in my life. And I'll say this quickly, and please allow me to finish this, okay? So you see there's no prejudice in this. And he was also gay. Now, this was another surprise. So I got this guy who was with the Marines for 3 years in Vietnam, and he's gay, and I'm coming into this deal, and I really need help. Well, isn't God interesting? Because I was so uncertain. I came from a military family, and everybody was all tough, and I didn't want to hit anybody. And I was very intuitive. and I was soft edged. And guess what I thought? I thought I was gay. Now I'm married and I've got a 3-year-old daughter, but I must be gay because I'm not that machine gun Mike. What's wrong with me? And so God gave me a gay sponsor who was a real servant to our country in combat in Vietnam. And so I don't know where we're going. It's like that line in Apocalypse Now. I don't know where we're going, but one look at you and I know it's going to be hot. So I'm joined up with George and we're going down the path. And George says, Mickey, you're not gay. Now, Mickey, you're not gay cannot resonate in me because I carry a concrete block on my shoulders. Nothing gets in that I haven't already pre-authorized. You understand? So he doesn't understand. I'm gay. He doesn't understand. So we went through that dance, and bless his heart, for 2 years, he walked me out of that valley. And he would say, you know, Mickey, it's always darkest before the dawn. And I would call him on the phone and I would say, George, is it dawn yet? Is it dawn yet? And so he stayed with me. And now to finish the part about gay, you understand I have, if you're gay, fine, please, I mean no offense. And we all have, but how can I go through life if I don't have my identity, if I don't know who I truly am, at least in that aspect? So finally, George says to me, I'll just wrap this quickly. George says, Mickey, I'm going to hold in your imagination two pictures. One of them is a naked man and one of them is a naked woman. And which one do you choose? And I'm looking, I'm going like, dude, I picked a woman. I mean, it's like, it was obvious to me because I missed the sexual part of homosexual. Okay, I had, well, anyway. So Mickey comes to life on one rung in the ladder, for goodness gravy. Now, what's the next thing? There are things that I've, there are books that I have not read that I live by or made an impression on me. And one of the books is What Makes Sammy Run. That title floored me. What makes Sammy run? What makes Mickey run? Why have I run all my life? Why can't I fit in? Why can't I go to school? Why do I want to die? And so we're working the steps, me and George. I go to visit him in his apartment. Now, George has had all the war he wants. So he's studying to be a Methodist minister. And so I go over, and this is my cheese sandwich story. Anyway, so I got my brown bag and I got my cheese sandwich and I'm going to be with George on my lunch hour. And I sit down and I'm telling him the same thing he's heard over and over and over again. And I'm saying, George, I'm cheating on my wife. I'm so angry. Nobody wants to work with me. I want to kill myself. And George is, you know, listening, you know, and he stands up and he says, Mickey, when I got where you are, I got down on my knees and I asked God from the bottom of my heart for help. And he picked up his jacket and he says, and you can use my apartment. And he left. Now, I'm in George's apartment with a half-eaten cheese sandwich. I laugh about this now, but it sure as hell wasn't funny then. I got half a cheese sandwich. And George says he got on his knees and asked God for help. So I got down on my knees and I didn't have a God. And the only thing I could say was, will somebody please help me? Turns out it was a good prayer. And I went back to work and I'm back at work for an hour. And then I called George on the phone and I said, George, I have one question. Okay, it's two questions. I got one question. Isn't it funny? I forget the two questions, but I'm going to get them. I'm going to get them. All right, I'm 74 years old. It's a little hard to hold on to all the information. I said, this is important. I'm going to leave you with a half-eaten cheese sandwich, and you're going to say, this guy is useless, for goodness gravy. All right, so I said, George, do I do the things I do because I'm alcoholic? And he said, yes, Mickey. And I said, is there a way I can recover from the things I do and the things I am? And he said, yes. And I got it through. I got it. I can recover from alcoholism. What's wrong with me is I'm alcoholic from the tip of my head to the tip of my toes, and I need help. And God can do something about that. I couldn't believe it. I'd been that way my whole life. I'd been this Mickey for my whole life. And George just said, you can recover from alcoholism. Well, I went out of there and I grabbed everybody at 1311 York Street where I got sober. And I told them, alcoholism is a disease and you can recover from it. Like they all knew. And I had just learned it. So anyway, it was this big discovery that I can get well. And I can get well. Now, what's the price of freedom? What does well mean? I've been in here almost 47 years, and I can tell you that what happens when I first went up the steps, and there were two layers of steps to get into the doors of this 1890 mansion, 1311 York Street, for my first meeting, I didn't know that when I put my hand on that doorknob to enter that and to go in there. First of all, I said to myself, once I open this door, my life's never going to be the same. And I was right about that. But what I didn't know was when I opened that doorknob, I was opening the doorknob to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was opening the doorknob to the world of the spirit. I was going, of course, I wouldn't know that. I was going right into the world of the spirit. Does that give you goosebumps at all? Because it sure as heck gives me goosebumps. And I've gotten a chance to travel for 47 years in the world of the spirit. I got to tell you this. Holy smokes. You got to go quick. Now we're going to do it. It wasn't like I did this seamless trip, okay, you guys, because I am an alcoholic. I carry this disease. I'm a carrier, and I'm also suffering from it. Now, what happens is I took this little break, and I'm trying to be funny because it's embarrassing. I took this break that was either 10 or 15 years long, and I had no sponsor. I would talk to my brother wizards, you know, we'd like talk, tell each other how great we were or whatever, but I had nobody that I was responsible to, that I had to answer to, that could help me get out of my own way. And I'll cut the story short. I ended up on the floor of this business that was failing. And the floor was like this artificial grass they put in the football stadiums, and I could see the phone up above me, but I had worked my way into suicide, and I had my knife out. Now, I had been going down, and while I was going down, I would say out loud this, I can't breathe. Now, my wife did not know, and incidentally, she's been in Al-Anon for 47 years with me, and we've been married for 50 years. We celebrated our 50th anniversary on New Year's Eve. I picked the date so I couldn't forget it. If you can forget New Year's Eve, man, you are seriously. Anyway, so I'm laying on this floor and I got my knife out and I can see the phone above me, but I can't get to it. And I'm thinking, God, I'm going to kill myself now. I'm going to open my veins right now. And it was, you're going to be cold, Mickey. It's going to be so cold. You're going to go into shock. And I was there for 4 hours. Now, if you define hell by the absence of God, I went to hell for 4 hours. I don't recommend it to anybody. It's horrifying. And I couldn't stop that. I'd set this up. Anyway, I just say, I couldn't breathe. I can't breathe. And the other thing I would say out loud is, can I please have a cookie? Now, that means I just wanted something sweet in my life, because a suicide is somebody who eliminates options. You eliminate, 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 you eliminate hope, you eliminate everything till there's only one option, and that's to take yourself out. So I'm laying on the floor, and by the grace of God, I fell asleep. Next morning, I woke up, and Maria doesn't know where I am or what I'm up to, but I remembered this woman I met in Minneapolis. And she talked about this guy in St. Paul who was like this deep breather in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he had the juju, you know what I mean? He had the juice, and I certainly needed the juice. And so I called her to get his number. And so I'm talking to her and I'm telling her what she's doing, what I'm doing. I'm 25 years sober. She's 16 years sober. She hears what's going on with me, and she gets, God bless her, her big book and everything and all her AA literature in her lap, and she starts 12-stepping me. And I'm listening to her, and I think after a while, I think, God, she has everything I want. And I asked her, would you be my sponsor? And she said, no, because girls are with girls and boys are with boys. And so, you know, and she keeps talking to me and 12-stepping me. And I finally just said, listen, I really need help. And you're making such sense to me. Will you please help me? And she said, Mickey, I'll work with you until you find a male sponsor. And she worked with me for 4 years, and her name was Cookie. Her name was Cookie. God gave me a cookie. I asked for it. I got the cookie. And we started down this road. What I really want to tell you is that I've had a transformation in here. In this book, Merton's book, he said, we wrap ourselves with the bandages of ego like a mummy. And then we identify with the bandages and say, that's me. And we're afraid if those bandages are ever unpeeled, there will be no me. And so what happens in the course of this thing is that God started to transform me from what? He transformed me from that false Mickey, that guy who couldn't do anything, that guy who was suicidal, into somebody that it can, you know what my father, one of my father's favorite words was citizen. And I got to be a good citizen, not all the time, but I got to be a good person. I got to be a safe person. I wasn't safe to me, and I wasn't safe with others. And I have had an opportunity to travel around the country and to share this message like we're doing now. But I want you to know that what I'm actually doing with you is I'm loving you. I'm telling you that. I love being with you. I love being with you. And God loves being with you. And he just does that through people. He does that through me. He has transformed me. I am not the man I came in here with. Here we go. Let's just go a little woo-woo here. You asked me to come here, and you're going to get it. So what does transform mean? Let's say we are now into the fourth dimension. Doesn't it say that in the book? We have entered the fourth dimension. Well, what's the fourth dimension like? Okay, I'm afraid of airplanes. I'm afraid of flying. And so when I get into turbulence in an airplane, I know that I'm afraid, and I figure there's got to be other people in that plane that are afraid. So I start praying the Hail Mary, and I pray a Hail Mary, and I pray a Hail Mary, and I pray a Hail Mary as long as that turbulence is going on. And in the course of praying that Hail Mary one time, all of a sudden I see myself on a little dirt road, and I'm walking into the house of the Blessed Mother of God. We're in the fourth dimension. What? And that's the truth. And I live in the fourth dimension. We are in this world, but not of it. I can't believe that he would have anything to do with me. I screwed this thing up so bad. And he has picked me to be with him and to let people know it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. I never have stopped working the 12 steps out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll end in this thing. If I thought it was amazing that he would pick me to be alive, to not be, to die alcoholic. And then I found out that the disease of alcoholism is not in the bottle. It's in me. Alcohol did not cause my alcoholism. And so we go along like this. So we've heard Don Pritz's name mentioned tonight. And in Colorado, and I live in Denver, in Colorado, we had no intimate conferences. We've been going out on the circuit, a lot of us going out on the circuit, and there were more intimate conferences. And I thought, well, I'd like to have that where you can rub up shoulders with people, and there aren't 1,500 of them like there were in our state convention. So we got to talking about that. And Marie and I put in $250, and Don put in $250, and we started this conference in the mountains. Now, there are lots of other people who made that possible. The three of us couldn't have done it, but the idea came out. And we started this thing, and we called it the Breckenridge Conference, and it has morphed into the Fellowship of the Spirit Conference. Now, when I say morphed, look at that God now. Here he is in action. I think we're going to go over here. Rumi, the Persian poet Rumi, says, I throw a stick right and it lands left. I dig a hole to catch others in it, and I fall in it myself. That's my experience with God. It's like, okay, I know what kind of conference we're going to have. And then he puts this conference together, this unbelievably beautiful conference. In Colorado, we call it the Miracle on the Mountain. People will come up to that conference. And it's like, I sponsored this guy for 9 years. And then he was sober for 9 years. He came to the conference one year. And he came up to me after the first meeting and he said, Mickey, I got to start my program again. I said, why? He says, man, I just got to start my program again. That's the miracle on the mountain. Who does these things? Rumi asks, who does these things? God does them. So we gave an opportunity, we gave him an opening. And I think, I don't know, that there are like 30 Fellowship of the Spirit conferences in the world today. I keep hoping if they'll ever listen to my name, Michael Moore, Irish, Musset, they'll invite me to Dublin, but it didn't work. It's never worked. I'm still here in Colorado, and that's that. But think about it. It's gone around the world. Now, what power does God have? What can one person do in the world? Can one person change the world? Absolutely. Three people better. Hundreds of people better. But you see what I'm saying? If I carry, the Greeks call the mother of God Theotokos. It means God bearer. Aren't we God bearers? Okay, on a good day? We are God bearers. That means when we walk into the room, God is present. And we were told when I first started getting sober through Al-Anon, they said, if somebody carries God into the house, God is present. And God is present here. I just happened to, I'll shut up in a minute, but I'm going to use every 4 minutes I got. I asked God years ago, I said, you know, I said, God, I would really start like, I'd really start to speaking. I'd start speaking on the West Coast. And I got 9 years on the East Coast. I threw a stick right. There it is going left. And it was Christmas. And Marie and I had been doing a lot of circuit work. And we were exhausted. And it was Christmas, 2 weeks to Christmas. And we were on Staten Island. In this Jesuit retreat center. And I looked at the people, 125 people there, and we were in there with Gary B. from Indianapolis. And so I looked at those people and I said, you know, the last place on earth we wanted to be is in New York City, 2 weeks before Christmas. We're exhausted. It's cold as a brass toilet seat. And I said, and to be with a bunch of tough New Yorkers. I told him that. And then I told him, and you are the most hospitable, loving people we have run into all year long. And I've just fallen in love with you. The East Coast for me. I have this little sign that says, Mickey, you've had enough, brother. Why don't you shut up and I'm going to do it. Thank you again. I love you so much.